Good. So once again, good morning, brothers and sisters.
Once again, welcome back now. Thought I'd start you out this morning with a little story, okay? Little story, or rather just a little anecdote. Because once upon a time, I had a conversation with this lady. Real deep conversation. This lady was very thoughtful, very insightful. And in the course of the conversation, she asked me, "Tell me, Father, why does God hide from us?" And I said, "What do you mean, why does God hide from us?" And she said, "Well, you know, why is God mysterious? Why is he always shrouded in smoke and mystery? Why does God hide from us?" Here, let me put it to you this way. If you were God, and you could get anything you wanted, and the only thing that you wanted was that all the peoples of the world would know you and fall hopelessly in love with you forever and ever and ever, and you knew that you could get this just by letting people know who you really are, don't you think you could do a better job than God does at getting the word out? Why does God hide from us? Why are holy places always dark places, shrouded in smoke and mystery? Well, whether you know it or not, you've asked that same question hundreds and hundreds of times in your life. Whether you know it or not, you too want an answer. Because every time you've turned to God in prayer, you've thrown up a prayer, and there's been no response whatsoever. You've asked that question. Whenever you wonder whether God's AWOL in a world spinning out of control, and you look up to the heavens and you say, "Where are you, God?" You've asked that question and you want an answer. I won't recount the entire conversation with you. Just jump right to the conclusion. The reason why God is mysterious is because of who God is and because of who we are. God is, by his very nature, infinite. We are, by our very natures, finite and limited. Any communication from one who's infinite to one who's finite is going to be received as mysterious. Let me give you an analogy just by way of comparison. Bet you lots of you are pet owners out there. You got a dog or a cat waiting at home, right? And you go home and that dog looks up at you, you know, with eyes as if they're having a mystical experience. Because you are to that dog like a divinity. And you try to communicate with that dog one fashion or another. It's not easy, is it? You know, the message doesn't always get through, does it? And it's not your fault, and it's not the dog's fault. It's just that you are what you are, and the animal is very limited. Well, there's a finite difference between yourself and a dog. But there's an infinite difference between ourselves and God. We should expect it to be mysterious. And by the way, do you know what the understanding, you know what the meaning of the word mystery is? Mystery does not mean something that you can never understand. Mystery rather means something that you can never fully understand. Do you know, please God, we all make it to heaven? You'll see God face to face in an absolutely enraptured love union. And that mystery, that rapture, is going to be just as deep and mysterious after 10 million billion years as it was the very first day you arrived. You'll never get to the bottom of that mystery. It doesn't mean you can't understand it. That's why sometimes God's going to ask us to do things that don't always make sense at their face value. He's going to ask us to take a leap of faith. My very simple message for you here today is when you take that leap of faith, it is the source of all the blessings in your life and in the world. It's always been that way. I think about Abraham of old. Abraham, 75 years old, and God goes to Abraham of all people, who's in the autumn years of his life. All he wants to do is just take it easy. He says, "Abraham, get up, take your wife with you, and go to a land that I will show you." He says, "I'll tell you when you get there. Just keep on walking." Abraham says, "God, you sure you got the right guy for the job?" God says, "I've chose you, Abraham. Now go." He had a choice to make. It didn't make perfect sense. It was a mystery. He made a leap of faith. And he became our father in faith. And every blessing is accrued to us because he made that leap of faith. I think about the Blessed Virgin Mary. Now you talk about a leap of faith. in the home in Nazareth, probably occupied in some very ordinary household chore, sweeping the floor, gathering water from the well, whatever it might have been. And the angel of the Lord appears to her and asks, "Will you be the mother of the Messiah?" She didn't know what she was getting herself into. She made a leap of faith and famously said, "Let it be done unto me as you say." And you already know, every blessing that has ever been given to us has come because she made that leap of faith. The reason why I mention this today is because in our first reading and in our gospel, you hear two leaps of faith, and they're met with miraculous consequences, with the message being that when you come into contact with the mysterious God in the ordinary circumstances of your life, do not hesitate to make that leap. It's where all blessings come from. Let me lead you through this, okay? First one comes from our first reading. First reading comes from the second book of Kings. And at its face value, the first reading makes no sense. No sense at all. You want to know why? It's because you only heard the rump end of a much longer story when you heard that first reading. So forgive me now if I tell you the rest of the story. Rest of the story that was in the first reading. Second book of Kings, it's all about a man named Naaman. Now, Naaman is the leading general of the army of Assyria. And at this time in history, Assyria is the most powerful fighting force in the whole world. It's about 800 BC, give or take. So when you hear about Naaman in the first reading, think Douglas MacArthur or Dwight Eisenhower, most powerful general and the most powerful fighting force in all the world, but the mighty general has an embarrassing problem. He's got leprosy. Now, you've heard enough homilies, you already know about leprosy, right? You know that it was a death sentence, leprosy was. You were going to go off by yourself into a leper colony, and you'd never see any of your family, friends, loved ones ever again, and you would die diseased and alone. Really bad. Then suddenly a little slave girl, captured from Israel, says to her mistress, she says, "I know someone in Israel who can cure leprosy. It's Elisha the prophet." The slave girl tells her mistress. Mistress tells Naaman. Naaman tells the king. King says, "Hey, what do you got to lose? Go down to Israel, see Elisha the prophet. What's the worst that could possibly happen?" So Naaman, the mighty general, he puts his mighty entourage. He travels like a head of state with 6,000 gold pieces and 10 silver talents and 10 suits of armor and a letter from the king, a caravan of horses and chariots and wagons and armor glistening in the Middle Eastern sun down to Israel to see the great prophet Elisha. But when he arrives in Israel, Elisha refuses to see him. Refuses to see, won't even come out of his tent. Instead, he sends out a messenger to see mighty Naaman. And this is what the messenger says. He says, "Yeah, the prophet Elisha told me to tell you to go wash 7 times in the Jordan River, and after that, you're going to be perfectly fine." Naaman's offended after all he's been through, after who he is. He says, "Wait a minute, I got to..." And you know, if you've ever been to Israel, you've seen the River Jordan. You know that it compares favorably to just a muddy ditch. He goes, "Let me get this straight. You want me to wash 7 times? You know, 4 times isn't good enough. Not 5 times. Not, it's got to be 7 in the River Jordan. Like I don't have better rivers back in my home." And he gets up and he's going to leave. He's going to quit. He's going to take his pride and his leprosy right back home with him. When a servant intervenes, he says, "Naaman, come on now. We've come this far. And if the great prophet had asked you to do something extraordinary, don't you think you would have done it? Can't you just do this simple little thing?" And that's where the first reading begins. He takes a leap of faith. On secondhand advice from a slave girl delivered by a middleman, Naaman gets up and he washes 7 times in the River Jordan and he comes out perfectly clean. A miraculous cure. Why? Because he took a leap of faith. That's why. Very similar message in the gospel. Now, you've heard this story about Jesus and the 10 lepers before, right? Here, just for fun, let me... raise your hand if you've heard this gospel many, many times before. You're very familiar with it. Jesus and the 10 lepers. See, most everybody, that's what I thought. And most of the time when this gospel is preached, they talk about gratitude. Almost always, 99 times out of 100. It's true, that's a great message. But did you know that at the heart of this gospel is a leap of faith, without which the miracle wouldn't have happened? And nobody ever tells you this. So allow me to tell you this, okay? Allow me to tell you this. 10 lepers walk up to Jesus. And they say, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. And Jesus says, go show yourself to the priest. And as they're on their way to the priest, they're healed. Now notice, Jesus doesn't heal them first, then send them to the priest. He sends them to the priest before they're healed. Now, do you know why a leper would go see a priest in the days of the New Testament? Do you know why? It's because the priest would examine him to make sure he's perfectly healed and able to re-enter into society. Do you know what would happen if a leper approached a priest and he wasn't healed? Back in the day, every priest carried on his belt a bag, and in this bag were 10 rocks. And he used these rocks. He threw them at lepers who got too close. Now, I know that sounds really mean, but that's the way things were. So these 10 lepers, they're not healed. Jesus says, go show yourself to the priest, a statement which makes no sense, except for the fact that they had confidence in the one who told them. They made a leap of faith. And you know the miraculous results. When you deal with God, you're always dealing with mystery. And like I said, you're going to be living this mystery in eternity. Expect it. Expect it, that he's going to ask you to do things that at their surface value don't make complete sense. He's going to ask you to take a leap of faith. He's going to ask you to write a blank check. Which, by the way, is one of the reasons why God is found by the poor and very rarely by the rich. Because who's most likely to write a blank check? The one who's got nothing left to lose. That's who. Now, there's going to come a time in your life, if it hasn't already, in which you're going to be like Naaman, or you're going to be like those 10 lepers. You're going to have nothing left to lose. God's going to ask you to take a leap of faith. When you do, swallow your pride and do it. What's a leap of faith look like? Could be any number of things. Could be a conflict that you have, and you know somebody's got to bury the hatchet, and you decide you're going to be the one to extend the olive branch first, not knowing what would happen. It's a leap of faith. Could be praying for a friend or a son or a daughter or a relative or a loved one, and you've been praying for him for years, and nothing happens, and you feel like you're wasting your time. Why offer up another prayer? It's a leap of faith. It could be as simple as waking up every morning and having some kind of difficulty, something broken inside of you that nobody else sees. You keep offering your best to God and to the world day after day after day, and you believe that in spite of your bumbling, God's actually making good out of it. Or it could be to continue to believe that in spite of a chaotic world spinning out of control, that God is still good and God is still in charge. You want to know why God asks us to make a leap of faith? It's only when we make a leap of faith do we meet God on similar terms. Do we meet God in humility? Do you have any idea how humble God is? God is so humble that he's ready to accept you, even when the only reason you're going to him is because you've got no place else to turn. I don't know even a girl in high school who would accept so much as a prom date on similar circumstances, right? But God will take, and those are the only reasons sometimes we turn to God, we got no place left to turn. And that's where the mystery finally meets mystery. Meet him on his own terms. When you feel that call to do something that doesn't make any sense, remember Naaman, remember the 10 lepers, and don't be afraid to write God a blank check. That's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Amen.